welcome to this week's edition of the Video News Endscreen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from Endscreen Media joins me from New York this week, right, Colin?
I'm in New York, and we're expecting snow in New York, in the New York area, as I'm sure everybody who lives in the Northeast knows. So a little bit cold for me, who's used to the California weather. But we have lots to talk about this morning. Leishman Research released their pay TV numbers, and Kagan released theirs. And boy, there was some eye-opening stuff in there, wasn't there, Will?
Yeah, so I'm going to get us started today. We're talking about Q3 2018 reporting from the pay TV industry on video subscribers today. This is the all-important cord-cutting meme that, of course, has dominated industry talk for years. And Q3 18 was really a poor showing, no other way to put it, for the industry, losing probably around 1 million subscribers, give or take. It depends on exactly whose data you're looking at. But they probably lost about 1 million subscribers, and that would make it the worst single quarter as long as the pay TV industry's numbers have been kept track of. So certainly to the extent that things had maybe sort of improved just a little bit over the past few quarters, Q3 18 was definitely a turn for the worse. So Leishman has the total industry in Q3 2018, the major operators, I should say, losing about 975,000. If you throw in all the remaining operators, you're definitely over 1 million. That 974 loss compares to a year ago of a loss of 407,000. So it's worse by about 570,000 year over year. And then you ask the question, what contributed to that swing? And it really all comes down to satellite and the two virtual pay TV operators, Sling TV and DirecTV Now. So quickly, on the satellite side, Dish and DirecTV, they lost an additional 250,000 subscribers in Q3 18 versus Q3 17. So they increased from a loss of 475K to a loss of 726K. And then the big culprit is actually the vast, vast decline in the number of subscribers added by DirecTV Now, which of course is owned by AT&T, and Sling TV, which is of course owned by Dish. So in Q3 17, those two companies alone added about 536,000 subscribers. They declined all the way down to just adding just 75,000 subscribers in Q3 18. So that's a swing of 461,000. So you add the 461 to the 251 that was lost on the core satellite business, and just those companies alone accounted for a swing of over 700,000 subscriber additions from Q3 17 to Q3 18. So that more than offsets the total change in the total industry, and also actually underscores that that telco and cable actually had a better Q3 18 than they had a Q3 17. So a little bit of a reversal of fortune for the big cable operators and the big telcos. But Colin, my big takeaway here is that, you know, if you want to see what the pay TV industry looks like, minus aggressive promotion from virtual pay TV operators or skinny bundles or VMPTDs, whatever term you want to use, if you want to look at what a quarter for the industry looks like without aggressive promotion by those companies, we got served a big helping of that in Q3, and it was really ugly. And to the extent that we see AT&T talking about pulling back on promotions of DirecTV Now, to the extent that Sling TV is, in my belief anyway, hitting up against the maximum limits of its appeal given how the market has changed away from it and competitors' products are just so much stronger now. If this is sort of the new norm, the new normal, there's some ugly quarters coming up in the pay TV industry. What's your take?
Yeah, I think you're probably right here, Will. The interesting thing is that I've always one of the things I do when I track the pay TV numbers is that I do try and separate out the virtual MVPDs from the MVPDs, and that's why I've always maintained that from the point of view of a business, virtual MVPDs look a little bit different to pay television, mainly because there's not a lot of profit in them, very little profit at all. And in fact, in some cases, I think they're making a loss. So, actually, if you take out the virtual MVPDs from the picture for the last 2 years, it's even worse than those numbers you just quoted. So, I've done that. And what I found is over the last 2 years, cable, satellite, and telco have lost 7.5 million subscribers. Basically, they've gone from in 2015, 2014, about 100 million households to 90 million households in Q3 2018. That's a 10 million swing. But get this, Will, it's even worse than that because if you factor in the new housing stock, their penetration has fallen from 88% to 74, 75%. That translates to 16 million homes that would have had pay television that do not have it, had penetration stayed as it was in 2014, 2015. So this is really a big swing. To put this in perspective, I reckon that that's about $1.3 billion in subscription revenue missing per month. So let's make no mistake, this is a massive change for the industry. And really, I think your point about the satellite business is a really good one. And I like looking at satellite in particular because satellite isn't muddied by the impact of broadband on the bottom line or any other service on the bottom line. It's just pure play pay television. And what this is really telling you is that, pay television is in bad shape. And yeah, there's still a lot of homes. There's still, what, 75 million homes that have it. But that's not going up. That is going down fast. And I wanted to draw attention to Kagan numbers. You talked about Lifeman numbers, which are really good at showing us tracking where the general direction is. But Kagan also estimated the overall virtual MVPD market. And what they said was over the last 3 quarters, they reckon that they've gained 2.1 million subscribers. And they say that the satellite, cable, and telco TV providers have lost 2.8. And there's a missing 700,000 in there that left pay television and then didn't pick up a virtual MVPD. And that's a pretty interesting number. It's a large number. And it's really suggesting that there's actually quite a lot of people who leave pay television and actually say, you know what? I don't need pay television. I don't need that at all. I'm very happy to exist on what I can find online, and from other sources. And I guess, this is not a surprise, right? We got Roku last week. We talked about Roku numbers last week. And the average Roku active user is streaming 2 hours and 10 minutes a day. We know that Netflix users, on average, are watching 1 hour and 15 minutes a day. So, one thing you can bet is that the heavier users, those people that make the 700,000 maybe, that's what they're filling their day with, and it's not hard to see how they're doing it, right? With Netflix spending $10 billion on content this year, and people like Amazon and Hulu spending billions as well, it's not like there's a lot of content. There's not a lot of content to watch. There's a ton of content to watch, so you can definitely see the dynamic at work here, right?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just to add to that, I've long thought that the core dynamic that's playing out is kind of along the lines as you described. People are putting in Rokus, they're putting in Sticks, they're doing a lot of other things to access this gigantic assortment of content that's available from Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, list goes on and on, YouTube, etc. And what happens over time is that they start to wake up to the fact that they're spending more and more time with these alternate sources and yet still paying a lot for pay TV. And they just realize at some point that there's a misalignment in their household budget, and they decide they really don't need pay TV at the price point that they were paying for it. So they drop it and they just migrate over. What's happened in these past couple of years is that this new alternative, this lower priced pay TV service, the virtual operators have sort of stepped in to stanch the bleeding, if you will. If you didn't want to pay $80 or $100 a month for pay TV, but now you're getting an offer for $30 or $40 or $50, and you still want to get broadcast or some sports or the award shows, what have you, then you might be willing to go back in after cutting the cord and pick up a virtual operator. And actually, the Diffusion Group did some research on this over the summer, and in fact, they found that 54% of cord cutters, 54% of people who had a virtual service were cord cutters. So exactly as I just described, people who cut the cord and then realized, hey, we really do want to still have a pay TV service, they go in and they pick up. Another third or so were people that that subscribed to both. In other words, they had a pay TV service and a virtual service running them in parallel. My theory there is they're sort of testing out the virtual to make sure it works properly before they switch over entirely. So they weren't like that first group that were willing to cut the cord entirely and then come back after. They're running in parallel, but a little more of a belt and suspenders approach. But I think that's the dynamic that's been playing out. And again, what we saw in Q3 was that there was a pullback in promotion by DirecTV Now, so fewer people being attracted to pick up that service after they were cord cutters or even to run it in parallel, the two big groups I just mentioned. So you've got a big drop off there. And Sling TV, I think, is running up against its limitations because they have purposely not really focused on carrying broadcast channels, whereas all the others, YouTube TV, Hulu, DirecTV Now, PlayStation, even now Fubo has big coverage on broadcast. It's a better service for mainstream users to have broadcast bundled. And so I think people are waking up that Sling TV is not as good a product, particularly for mainstream. Maybe for other people that have an antenna or willing to put in a separate box, it's okay. But it's a big challenge for Sling TV. DirecTV Now is pulling back, and we're starting to see the real weakness in the industry, as you pointed out.
Yeah, and it's funny, I was looking at this data this week, Will, and I went back and I looked at some Nielsen data, and my contention is that one of the reasons I track virtual MVPDs separately from regular MVPDs, boy, I wish we hadn't called it virtual MVPD. It's very confusing, isn't it?
I know. I keep wanting to use Skinny Bundle, but someone made a comment on my article the other day, sort of pushing back that's an outdated term. So I'm actually trying to discipline myself not to use it.
He's
right. They really are not. They are more.
They're not that skinny. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Anyway.
But so I always have thought that when somebody cuts the cord, that virtual MVPDs are an enabler, and not their. What happens is exactly what you said happens, which is the people look at the fact that they're not using pay TV as much as they used to, and they're looking for ways to save money on that while keeping core channels. And Nielsen data suggests that actually virtual MVPD users watch quite a bit less than regular pay television users. They say 2 hours less. They look a lot more like people who just rely on over-the-air television, who do watch considerably less than pay television subscribers. And, you know, this really emphasizes, I think, that for those people that are leaving, this massive number that are leaving, that they really have changed their behavior now. A large percentage of these people, for them, the lead service now is not pay television. It's an SVOD service. That's where they go first when they're ready to settle down in the evening and watch. And whether that's Hulu or Amazon or probably for many people, Netflix, that they really have changed their behavior. And the virtual MVPD, far from being the lead service now in many homes, is actually the second service. It's the place they go second when they can't find something that they want to watch, or as you say, when there's something very specific that they want to watch that is only available through that service, and we're thinking, local sports or the Oscars or something like that. So we're really seeing a very, very clear indication now that for a large proportion of people, their behavior has fundamentally changed, and they're starting to direct their money to the services where that their attention is being held.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right, Colin. And what that speaks to, I think, is that, when you have a subscription to a virtual service, it's a much more casual relationship. It's not a necessarily the must-have kind of relationship that maybe somebody had 5 years ago or 10 years ago or further ago with their core pay TV service, which they were using for 6 hours a day, 8 hours a day, et cetera. Now it's much more of a mix and match. And I think that raises yet another thing that's sort of precarious for the industry here, which is that the more casual those relationships are that people have with these virtual operators, the higher the churn rate is going to be as well. So if you're watching a pay TV service 6, 8 hours a day, as you were maybe 5 years ago, your churn rate was relatively low because that was a must-have service. And once you had it in there, you had it in there. Now we're talking about watching these services less, as you pointed out, watching others more, SVOD more, and getting in and out of these services is just a couple of clicks. These are web services. These aren't truck rolls to pick up a box or drop it off or call into customer service, what have you, like in the old days. These virtual services are web-like, in and out very easily, and that means that churn is going to be higher than it was on the traditional service as well. All of which I think, to me, as I was saying kind of earlier in the podcast, is that I think we're in a sort of a moment here of lots of volatility, a lot of instability in the industry, different players still formulating their strategies, AT&T right at the head of the list. We have really no idea what they're planning to do with DirecTV Now. They were very aggressive. Now they pulled back. They talking about maybe even pulling back on some content. Meanwhile, YouTube TV is a complete black box. We've never heard anything from Google as far as what their strategy is going forward. I mean, it's possible we could wake up on any given day and Google could announce that they're sunsetting YouTube TV for any number of different reasons. We have no idea. So it's all a very, very unpredictable time in the industry. The only thing we do know, as we pointed out earlier, is that the rate of dropping core traditional pay TV appears to be accelerating.
Yeah, YouTube TV is a pretty interesting example, Will, because I've run the numbers, and even after their $5 increase from $35 to $40, I reckon that they're losing money on that service, even just paying for the content that's in it. So you've got to ask yourself, why are they willing to throw money at this? Why are they willing to lose money on a service? And there's a couple of ways that YouTube TV, I think, is helping them. The first thing is that they announced that they were putting the advertising inventory that they get with YouTube TV, and of course, they get a bunch of avails that they can insert ads into as part of the agreements with the license, with the TV license providers. They're adding that into inventory to YouTube Preferred, which is their preferred advertising inventory program. And remember, YouTube has had a lot of problems with brand safety. And what it said is that with the YouTube Preferred inventory, that that is brand safe, that there's human beings that are really looking at that content and making sure that ads don't get placed against unsavory content. And so by adding the YouTube TV inventory, ad inventory to that program, that sort of increases the pedigree that advertisers can buy in that program, right? They get next to traditional television content, which obviously is a premium product. So I think that helps them there. And it also helps them, I think one big strategic move that YouTube is taking is they want to be on the television. And this, of course, is a natural television product, so that gets them a bigger footprint there. So I think that's one of the reasons why they're willing in the short term to take a loss on this product. I'm not sure, as you say, I think it's far less likely that they would just withdraw it. I think it's far more likely that they would bifurcate the channels in it and start increasing the price when they get to a stable position, or what they consider to be a stable position. But either way, it sort of highlights the fact that, look, many of the virtual MVPDs are in an unsustainable position with the amount of content that they're putting in and the price points that they've selected. DirecTV Now is already taking action to try and rectify that and try and figure out how to make that product more palatable for them as a business. And I got a feeling that in the end, YouTube will have to do the same with YouTube TV. So, you know, it's a, as you say, a very unstable period in pay television history. But I think the one thing that we can say for sure is that we're going to see change continue to come to that industry as it readjusts to all of the dynamics that are forcing it to change.
Yeah, and I think you're 100% on target, by the way, with the YouTube motivations. And it's a very smart play by them to use to be willing to sustain a loss on YouTube TV in order to build their presence in the TV ad business. Makes a ton of sense for them. How they play that out over time, of course, remains to be seen, but you and I both know that the most significant thing happening in TV advertising right now is this gigantic push to make TV ads smarter, to make them more data rich, to make them more targetable, to try to raise CPMs, to try to reduce ad loads, to compete better with SVOD, etc. So YouTube, Google, they are well positioned to be in that business, and they're using YouTube TV as a wedge to get in there. So I think you're right that the likelihood that YouTube TV just disappears overnight, and I wasn't trying to start any rumors before when I said that. I was really just pointing out that it's truly remarkable how quiet Google has been about YouTube TV's progress. I mean, it is absolutely a black box. Nobody truly, there's lots of speculation, but nobody really knows externally knows how well or poorly YouTube TV is doing. So I don't foresee them necessarily closing it, but I think to your point, it's certainly not in a steady state at this point. There's going to be further evolution to it and to other parts of the market. And all of that means guys like you and me have continued grist for podcasts.
We certainly do. I think as a passing shot, we're pretty much out of time here, but I will say one of the things that Kagan said was, they estimated that the virtual MVPDs have picked up about 2.1 million subscribers so far this year in 2018. And I did the numbers, and it looks like AT&T's DirecTV Now and the Dish's Sling picked up about 450,000. So that suggests that the other services, and maybe we speculate that that's YouTube with the amount of advertising they've been doing, have picked up the balance, which is what, like something like 1.6 or 1.5 million have gone to the other services. So big changes, I think, and as you say, lots for us to continue to talk about for this year and into 2019.
Fair enough. All right, Colin, well, enjoy your trip to New York. And thanks, everybody, for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News Endscreen Media Podcast. And we'll see you all again next week.